Come on.
Welcome to Money Savage, a savage approach to personal finance. This is George Grombacher, and the time is right. Welcome to today's guest, strong and powerful Diane Bordeaux. Diane, are you ready to do this?
Absolutely. It's going to be fun.
Yes, yes. Let's do this. Diane is the president of the Humphreys Group. She is a certified financial planner. She's an MBA. She's the co-author of Rewriting the Rules, Telling Truths About Women and Money. I'm excited to have you on. Diane, tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Thanks, George. It's really fun to have an opportunity to talk with you. So I currently live in San Francisco, where I've lived since graduating college. I'm a native of Wisconsin. I grew up in Milwaukee, but I moved here pretty quickly after graduating. And I got into this financial services world not on a lark or not by chance, but when I was in college, I was very much a liberal arts humanities person and didn't really know much about the world of business. And so I just got myself just an admin job. And through a friend, I became interested in the markets and all of that. And so one thing led to another, and I needed to get some credentials and some experience. And so I got myself into the business school at Berkeley, and after that, I got my CFP designation. And since now I'm dating myself, so I started working at the firm, of which I'm now the president, about 30 or so years ago. And it was founded by a woman named Henrietta Humphreys, and she was really one of the first wave of fee-only financial advisors. And so I joined her while I was in business school and have proceeded up the ranks, so to speak, ever since. And she retired in 2002, at which point I became the president. And we are now a team of five. We're all women. We our office, our physical office, is in downtown San Francisco. We're not there much these days. Our practice is a full-on wealth management business model. We are AUM, and we provide very comprehensive financial planning alongside integrated ongoing portfolio management. So it's a pretty typical business model and a very robust process. We're very process-oriented. And about 70% of our clients are women, and it's always been that way. And so we have long been interested and expert at serving the women in our world. And, you know, one thing, I used to say that my personal mission was to help women get smarter about money, but I realized that wasn't exactly right. I really now say that my personal mission is to help women see the ways in which they're already smart about money, and to then use that foundation and starting point of strength to keep building, because that's the way to build your confidence. And there's been so much written about the confidence gap. I don't know if I believe it. I think it might be a definitional issue as much as anything, but we love to help women see what they're already good at, because it's a way to create strength and confidence moving forward.
Well, I think there's a lot of really powerful stuff there, and I appreciate you sharing that. Mm-hmm. So,
thanks.
So, talking about helping to really reinforce or help women see the ways that they're already smart about money, I'd love to just jump right into that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was one of the reasons we ended up writing this ebook, the book that you mentioned, Rewriting the Rules. So the genesis of the book a couple of years ago, as I know you know, all financial services firms of all sizes want to cultivate women clients. They're really focusing their marketing messaging toward women. And, you know, that's with good reason, because the statistics point out that about 40% of the primary breadwinners in U.S. households are women. About 85% of major financial decisions are made by women. And 60% of personal wealth is controlled by women. And those numbers are all going up. And so it makes sense that growth in financial services is really driven by women. And so as a result, and as I said, we've long served women and focused the way we do things on the perspectives and strengths and priorities of women. So as a result of this, there are all these studies being done by these financial services firms to really look at how do we serve women better. And, you know, there's just tons of data out there. So we decided to take a look at it and read the studies and see what we could find out. And as a result, we decided to group the data into sort of myths that we could see, okay, what is this really saying about women and money? And does it is it in sync with the cultural narrative, or is it telling us something new? And so it really turns out that a lot of these, the data gives information that will go against the messaging that we as women have gotten about money. And what we really realized in doing this is that the financial services industry doesn't really address the perspectives and priorities and values and strengths of women. And so we wrote this book. It's organized by 10 myths about women and money. And what we do is we take the data to bust or debunk the myth, and then we add in, you know, what the data tells us. And then we write about what we see about this from our experience in working with women. And then we add, what is our advice to you to do things differently or to think about things differently? So some of the myths, for example, are, first of all, the big one is that men are better investors than women. That's simply not true. There's another myth quite prevalent that women are more risk averse than men. That's also not true. I think a better way to say it is that women are more risk aware than men. There's a lot of talk about women being less interested in investing. That's also not true. And so I could go on and on. The book is available, and you can see what you think. But so that's the basis of the book. And so when it came time to write the conclusion, I sat back and I thought, okay, let's just gather all this stuff that we've learned about women and money, and what does it mean, and what can it tell us? What are the lessons learned? And furthermore, if I were to sit down and create a financial services firm that really does address the needs and perspectives and strengths that women have more than men, what would it look like and how would it be different? And that really forms the conclusion of the book. So I'll stop there.
I appreciate all that. So is
it, I'll let you. I don't know if I should just keep talking.
No, I mean, pouring through just an immense amount of data and tried to separate the wheat from the chaff. I think that's the proper term, but really get down to the truth and what, I guess that's right. The truth about women and money, and to appreciate the fact that 80% of financial decisions are made by women, 60% of wealth is controlled by women in the United States. So that there are so many misconceptions or lies or myths or whatever it is, inaccuracies, that's just not serving people very well. And it's not serving women well or relationships for that matter.
It's stories that we tell ourselves that are not really productive. They don't serve us, and they create a narrative that is just not the case. And, you know, there's this whole thing out there that men are better at doing money than women, and it really is definitional. We have a client who we were meeting with her recently, and she's very education focused, and she always wants to learn more about investing and all that kind of thing. And she thinks she's not very good at money. And there we were in her house, and her husband, who she defers to and thinks is really smart about money, is watching, you know, that Jim Cramer show, and he's he's very frantic about the markets and all of that, making predictions, talking to his advisors, all of this stuff. And at the meantime, you know, at this meeting, she pulls out 12 months worth of detailed Quicken data for herself and her her consulting business. And I'm like, Nancy, this is what it means to be good at money. Look at your looking at your cash flow. You're living within your means. You know what your numbers are from a spending standpoint. You know what you need to do. This is what we're talking about. The investing, yeah, the stock market, yes, of course, that's important. But on a personal level, being good at money can be much more broadly defined. And there are things that you can spend your time on that are going to have a much greater impact on your long-term financial health than, you know, following that ticker tape at the bottom of the screen all day.
And I'd probably go on to say that that's not a constructive or a smart thing to do at all, is to watch talking heads on TV and to be letting that seep in. Think that that is really, really powerful. Let's, you know, figure out what stories it is that we're telling ourselves, then recognizing that a lot of them are not serving us. And that's true, I think, of every aspect of life. And I mean, we're having this conversation on June 1st, and the world is a very strange place. And I think that there's a lot of stories that we're telling ourselves about probably everything that's going on right now. And to take a step back and to really examine, okay, why is it that I think that I'm not good at money? Why is it that, you know, it was something imprinted on me? Was it what my somebody told me when I was little, or somebody told me when I was grown up, or whatever it is?
Oh, but, yes.
Right?
You know, one of the... Go ahead, sorry.
No, that's it.
I was just going to say, one of the things that one of my colleagues and I have started doing as a bit of a practice when we're talking about something, we'll preface our comments by saying, the story I'm telling myself about this is... blah, blah, blah. Right. And it really is a good way to frame it and remind yourself that it is a story you're telling yourself, whether it's we're discussing a client or our spouses or whatever, you know, our own behavior. So I know storytelling is really a big deal these days.
Yeah.
But, you know, thinking about the narrative is quite crucial. Yeah.
Yeah, that is that's something that in conversations with my wife that I've been prefacing, not those exact words, but what I've been saying is I think that I really want the world to be this way. I really want the world to not be a racist place or a violent place, whatever it is, and that's why I'm trying to. So just trying to be mindful of why it is that I'm looking at a problem in a certain way. What an incredibly powerful thing. And certainly for your professional work, helping women, because from my experience, all the, if I went back and looked at the 600 different conversations I've had with guests on the show, if I'm just being honest, I find that the conversations I have with my female guests are oftentimes better, and I enjoy them more. I find women to be very, very extremely sophisticated and thoughtful when it comes to money, and so that we have such a difference in what's really going on is obviously an important thing.
You know, it's so interesting because I think that these days, being good at the technical aspects, whether it's your investment strategy or whatever, that's really, of course, table stakes. And what's getting a lot of attention on a broader scale, thankfully, finally, is this idea of empathy and bringing empathy to the table. And again, not everything has to be gender defined, but I think we can generally agree that women are more naturally and have been, our culture encourages us and rewards us for being and demands that we're more empathetic. And it turns out, you know, and so for many years in our world, we talk about this kind of stuff as the soft skills, right? The soft skills. And if you go down that path, you quickly learn it's anything but soft. It's very difficult and it requires courage to go down that road, not just for yourself, but to help clients in that way. And I think, you know, I am not at all the expert at empathy. I'm striving like everybody else. Brené Brown is a terrific resource. Any of her books are so good. And I believe one of her most recent ones, Dare to Lead, there's a chapter on empathy and shame. And if you want to be challenged in your thinking, you start thinking about shame and the role that it plays in our lives, but especially in our money lives. And, you know, so I think the idea of bringing empathy to the table is happily getting more currency. It's becoming more mainstream, let's say. And there have been a lot of, coincidentally, not all, but many women leading, you know, real thought leaders who have devoted a lot of their work to this idea of how to become more empathetic before it was as trendy as it is now. I'm thinking of Elizabeth Jaton, who has done a lot of work. She is currently very involved in Golden Gate University's life planning curriculum. I'm thinking about, you know, Carol Anderson created Money Quotient years ago, and now her daughter Amy Mullen runs it. What it is I would say, I don't know if they would say this, but it's an empathy-based discovery process to work with clients in terms of what is their narrative about money. Sudden Money by Susan Bradley, the whole idea of how to work with clients during difficult life transitions. And we ourselves host conversation circles on a regular basis. We have for about 5 or 6 years now. And the idea is to create a safe space for women to talk about the non-numerical aspects of money, you know, many of which I've sort of alluded to. But this whole idea of being empathetic and especially being vulnerable is really, really crucial. And I think that it's important to remember that it's a skill that can be learned. It's difficult and just as demanding as technical expertise, but you can learn it. You can get better at it. You can cultivate your skill in these areas. It's not the domain of just women, let's say. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's all really well said. And I love the idea that soft skills are not some super easy thing that you have and you get better at. In fact, it's quite the opposite. Anybody can go online and take a course about, you know, understanding the stock market and all that jazz. And that's very valuable and important. But to really roll up your sleeves and get into the messy stuff like shame and being vulnerable about, you know, your feelings and past experiences, that's that's the important work. So amen on all that, Diane. I love it.
You know, yeah, one other thing. You know, I was one of the things that we talk about is, as we say, we want to listen without fixing. You know, the idea of listening without fixing. And as an advisor, we're trained to fix. We're trained to create solutions and you know, help clients. And of course, that's important at the right time. But often, I think, in terms of the empathy piece, is to just listen and without fixing, without, you know, letting clients just say what they need to say and not immediately responding. Or you know, one of the things I hate most is when people say, well, that's a first world problem. You know, that's a quality problem, because for that, that's so discounting, because for that person, it is a problem. And of course, we have to keep perspective and all of that. But, you know, when we say to a client, well, all you need to do is cut your expenses by 10% and then it'll all be fine. And, you know, that's a big deal for that person, right? That's their life you're talking about. And I'm not saying you don't get that message, but, you know, when somebody will say something difficult, I'll just say, wow, that sounds hard. And just be quiet. You know, you can respond in a way to let them know that you've heard them and to encourage them to keep talking, because that's really what they want and need as a first step, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I've found.
I love it. Listen without fixing. I think, excellent stuff. Well, Diane, Savage Nation is ready for your difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
So I like to think of my superpower as being curious. I think that one of the best things we can all do is cultivate a true sense of curiosity. One of the great things about being curious is that when you're being curious, you cannot be judgmental. When you're being curious, you're listening more than you're speaking. And when you're being curious, you're doing, that's a good way to get in the habit of listening without fixing. So I love to ask questions. I did need to learn the hard way that asking questions isn't enough. You can be gratuitous, or you can ask questions that are basically irrelevant. But learning to ask questions that take the conversation into a deeper level is quite important. And asking difficult questions can be, you know, you might have to summon your courage to ask them. But what I found is that when you ask those difficult questions, many people are relieved that you've asked them and that you've helped them tackle that difficult topic. So that's what I love to be curious. I love to ask questions. And when I think when you do so with respect and true authenticity, another overused word, but there it is, I think that it's a wonderful thing.
Wank, that is great stuff. That definitely hits. Come on.
Come on.
Diane, thank you so much for coming on. Where can Savage Nation learn more about you?
Thank you, George. It's really fun to have this conversation. So our firm's website is humphreysgroup.com. That's H-U-M-P-H-R-E-Y-S group.com. When you're there, you can download the book that I've been referencing. As I said earlier, no cost. Also there, you can find links to our social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and also Twitter. I personally am on Twitter myself. My Twitter handle is @dbordeaux, I suppose. Okay?
Perfect. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Diane your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to humphreysgroup.com. That's H-U-M-P-H-R-E-Y-S group.com. And download a free copy of the book and follow them on social media. I'll list all those in the notes of the show. Thank you again, Diane.
Thanks, George. It really is great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And until next time, keep fighting the good fight, because we are all in this together. I've been asked by so many people over the past couple of years about how do I start a podcast, that I've developed and released a course that will teach you exactly how to do that step by step, from figuring out the kind of show that you want to have to understanding how all the technology works behind it, and then how to get great guests and keep the thing moving and how to grow it. So if you're interested in that, check it out. You can go to georgegrumbacher.com/podcast course and you'll find it there. You can just go to the website. I'll also list that in the notes of the show.